Welcome to the Cabin Culture Podcast, where we spend a little more time diving deeper into all the fun parts of cabin culture. I like to think of this as both the material and imagined expressions of how cabin lovers, dwellers, builders, and designers wish to live a more simple and authentic life. On this episode, we're talking to Janelle Gallucci, the owner and host behind the Tahoe House. If you're a numbers person or an entrepreneur, this episode is definitely for you. Janelle's background in startups, scaling, and sales leads to a whole lot of insight on how she grew her cabin's revenue from $25,000 in year one to over $130,000 this past year and still growing. She shares how they did this and a whole lot of insight for how you can make this happen at your own cabin. Spoiler, a lot of it comes down to hospitality, communication, and genuinely caring about your guest experience. Somehow I'm not surprised. Plus, branding. She's really, really good at branding. So join us, and I'd love to hear from you on which takeaways you'll be applying in your own business. Feel free to share those over on Instagram, in the YouTube comments, or even better, in an Apple Podcast review. I know you've been thinking about it, so maybe today is the day to make my day. As always, thanks for joining us. Let's do it.
Janice, what's up?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. You are coming to us from, you live in Tahoe.
I do. I live in Lake Tahoe.
Okay, perfect. This is so exciting. We have not done a ton of West Coast cabins or houses, which we'll talk about in a minute.
I know.
But I'm so intrigued. Tahoe is a place I've never been, but I follow many cabins and homes there to live vicariously. So I feel like I would love for you to start us off there. For those of us who have not been to Tahoe, because you bought a short-term rental there first and then moved in full-time. So that's like the most compelling case ever for the location. Tell us about it.
Ooh, tell you about Lake Tahoe. Lake Tahoe is magic. Like, that's all I can say. It's always felt magic. And I thought moving here, I was worried that might wear off, and it just hasn't. You know, Kevin and I grew up in a really small lake community in northern Jersey. You know, to the West Coast folks, I call it upstate New Jersey, because people are like, oh, like Snooki from the Jersey Shore? Like, no, like in the woods, on a lake, super rural, like meat and potatoes town on the border of Jersey and New York State, on a lake next to Mountain Creek Ski Resort. And so we grew up like on the water, boating, biking, hiking, riding ATVs.
Wait, so you've known each other for a long time.
Kevin and I have known each other for a long time. We actually grew up down the road from each other. We didn't date till much later in our lives, but we're from the same place. And so that's where we're from. And then, you know, I went to college in upstate New York and started my career in New York City. So I was this big, you know, New York City career woman. Kevin and I start dating in my mid-20s, and I get this opportunity. The startup I was working at was looking to open a new office. I had no idea where it was going to be, but I wanted the managing director role. That was like the ultimate, like when you start at the bottom at this company, like that is like, you're like a mini CEO. You're running the P&L. You're like running an office and a business. Yeah. And so I raised my hand, had no idea where it would be, got selected by the board, and turned out it was going to be in San Francisco. And so we had really never been out west. We're like, California, like palm trees, beaches, this is going to be awesome.
Very different.
That is not San Francisco or the Bay Area. But, you know, did our thing there. And, you know, it was really a great area for our careers. And it was
is a great life. Is your husband in startups too? I'm like, I'm going to need to really hold back from nerding out on the startup thing. Because when I read your pre-interview, I used to run a startup. So this is like a whole past life of mine. Is he also in the startup world?
So Kevin and I are, he's my fiance. We're engaged. We just got engaged. We've been together for 13 years, just got engaged in Tahoe on our boat last September. And we're getting married.
Congratulations.
This September in Tahoe. Yeah. So yeah, yes and no. So Kevin was a very much like blue collar guy. He did like all sorts of odd jobs. He didn't go to college. And when we got this opportunity to move across the country, that was when our relationship got serious, because we were a year or two in and I was like, hey, do you want to like move to San Francisco with me? And he was like, sure. So moved out here. And as a part of that, you know, he was always big in the automotive space, and he, you know, like working on cars, like in hot rod shops and stuff. And so where
he literally sounds like my husband.
They should be friends.
Didn't go to college, but like really good with construction, handyman stuff, but really his background is in mechanics and loves working on cars. We have like a Pontiac
oh my God, if I forget this, he's going to kill me. He doesn't listen to the podcast. We have some kind of Pontiac out front of our house right now that he's working
on. I know that we have a 1958 Chevy Delray. I know, like, I know all the makes and models because, I mean, you can put a car out on the road to Kev and he will, like, know literally the year, make,
and model.
So he went to this
program. We need both of them on the podcast, though they would take it over.
Should. I know.
Sean would love this.
I know. But yeah, he went to this program. It was like a 6-month program, much cheaper than a 4-year degree. And like, got hired at a startup doing 3D modeling, like basically making more money than I did out of college. And so that always amazed me. And so that's what he does. He does 3D modeling in the automotive industry. And so he was working for startups. I was working for startups. Then I was working for big tech companies. And now we both work for ourselves. We both have LLCs and are like, you know, self-employed.
Doing similar kinds of work, but now you get to totally choose who you're working with, how much time you spend with them, like all the good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So this is like one of the things that we're probably going to spend most of our time talking about is your background, because we haven't had anyone on the podcast in the short-term rental world who has such a strong background in sales, business. I should probably correct myself. We might have, but yours is a very different perspective and you're like all in on it. And I do feel like, especially when looking at your revenue numbers, it's clear that what you know is working. And right. So I do want to really dive into the business side of your Airbnb. Before we do that though, just tell us, you bought it before you moved to Tahoe. So give us like a brief overview of the history of the house, but then we can dig into the details.
Okay. So back to the story, we get moved to the West Coast. San Francisco is not the California dream we were expecting, but it's great for our careers. And so we find pretty quickly that we're really missing the lake life. Like we're missing boating, we're missing snowboarding, we're missing like just having that lifestyle and also having that sense of community. And so it was super random. The cousin of one of our good friends from New Jersey was in Tahoe. We had never even heard of Lake Tahoe. And he messaged us on Facebook.
You had never heard of Lake Tahoe?
When you grow up in Jersey, you don't, we thought all California was palm trees and beaches. Like you don't know. I mean, no, most people don't leave the town we're from. And so, you know, this random friend invites us up and we're like, nah, we don't have a place to stay. And he's like, no, you can crash at my friend's house. Like they'll let you stay for free. And so like we pack up our bags, 4th of July, 2013, show up at this random stranger's house. You know, 10 years later, these people have become, they are our best friends. Like we had such a close community here. And so once that happened, we had friends here with cabins and they all like rented these little cabins in Southlake that had 2 bedrooms. And so they're like, anytime you want to come, you can come stay with us. And so we started coming to Tahoe a lot. Like it was to the point where we were coming like every other weekend. And I'm really grateful that our friends hosted us so much in those early days.
Those are good friends.
Yeah. And so, you know, living in the Bay Area, it's $1 million for a fixer upper. We never ended up buying there. And we're like, we want to buy a house. We love Tahoe. Like maybe we can find something super cheap up in Tahoe and like at least we'll have a place to stay. And so that was how it started. It was just like, it would be fun to like own a house in Tahoe and like, oh, it's kind of cool. We can rent it. Like it was not, we were not thinking of it as real estate investors. And it's funny because now I'm looking to expand our portfolio and I'm doing this like super in-depth analysis of the month on, you know, cash on cash return. And like, I didn't do any of that with this first investment. And like, probably just got lucky that it worked out.
Same. But I think sometimes those are the most beautiful because I do think that like, as you scale and grow, and I found this as we've had a couple, like it is impossible to have your heart as in it for multiple, right? And so that first one that's often driven just by heart and not by numbers and not by data. And like, you have to do a little bit of the numbers to be like, am I going to go bankrupt? Which feels important. But it really is just such a gut, like heart move that I think is really beautiful.
Yeah, it was cool. So yeah, that was in 2019 that we bought that place. And so we used it essentially as our personal vacation rental. And so we were just psyched. Like if we rented it all summer and all winter, which are the peak seasons here in Tahoe, we could make enough money to fully cover the expenses of the house and then have it for ourselves in the spring and the fall. And so it was important that we started to spend 6 months and 1 day at the house, because we very strategically bought the house in Nevada in Lake Tahoe, which has very different tax benefits. And so we actually, as self-employed people, like that became our primary residence. And so we really had to spend half the year there and then rent it the other half of the year to like claim it as our primary residence.
Okay, that was really smart because a lot of us are looking at places that is just definitively within one state. But Lake Tahoe is so large. How many states does it border? Nevada?
It's two. So it's basically California and Nevada, and the lake's kind of split right down the middle. And we're in state line, like very specifically, like a stone's throw over the border. So like we're in South Lake, but on the Nevada side. And so, you know, Nevada doesn't have a state income tax. Of course, you still have federal income taxes. And then the property taxes.
They don't have state income tax?
No. And so what's wild also about the property taxes. So when you buy a house, like for example, you buy $1 million house in California, it's just a flat percentage. It's a 1% of the purchase price. No matter, even if the cabin was purchased for $200K before you, and now you're buying it for $1 million, you're paying $10,000 a year in property taxes. In Nevada, on the same house, you're paying like probably $2,000 to $3,000 in property taxes. And so we started our search in California, found a lot of really cheap cabins for $200K to $300K, but then realized that if we went over to Nevada, where it's much harder to find a place, there's less inventory, the prices are high, we'd be able to get that benefit. And I feel like that was when we started thinking like time and financial freedom. Like we were W-2 people at that point. And that was kind of when that transition started of like breaking away from that 9-to-5 W-2 tradition and like starting to think differently, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How did you find out that Nevada was so different? Did someone, or you keep saying it, am I saying it wrong? How do you say that?
People will know that you're not from here if you say Nevada. That's how East Coasters say it, Nevada. It is Nevada. Like the residents
here are like,
it's Nevada with an A.
This is a good takeaway of the podcast because I definitely made that mistake several times already. And that is what's so, this is why I wanted to like interview more short-term rental owners mid-country and West Coast, because I do think, I mean, beside how we say Nevada.
Got it. Nevada.
I did get it. Okay. Regardless of how we say that, I do think there are some cultural differences between the West Coast and the East Coast, though I'm learning the more that I talk to that they're actually like quite minimal. But what do you see as being different? Because you did grow up on the East Coast, which is great. Did you go to cabins as a kid? Like, do you have much experience with like the Adirondacks or the Poconos or?
Yeah, we would do, my family, like my parents really saved a lot so that we could do one vacation a year. And they were big skiers. Like they got me on skis at 3. I skied from 3 to 15. And then when I was 15, I was like, skiing's lame. I want to snowboard. And I've been snowboarding since then. But, you know, we did a lot of ski trips as a family. And so, you know, we live near Mountain Creek. So that would be just something on, you know, we could do on the weekends. But we did, you know, Killington. We would go to Gore. Like we did a lot of Vermont, upstate New York. We loved the Poconos. So we did have some of that experience. But like, ultimately, I think what drew us to Tahoe was just the experience of growing up on a lake in a small community where people know each other and, you know, you're able to just live that lifestyle of like outdoors. Yes. It's not like, you know, after spending time in New York City and San Francisco, I'm like a really amped up high energy person. And when you put me in those environments, like, I am like a maniac. Like I can't even drink coffee. Like I'm just, it is so stimulating to me. And so like you put me in a place like this. And I think now I have a healthy balance of like ambition and motivation and energy, but also like, I've chilled out a lot. Like I go for a walk every day.
Yeah, that sounds healthy. But there is something about lake life because we own a total of 3 cabins and 2 of them are not on water. And the 3rd one is on a lake and it's the lake that I grew up going to in Maine. And it is the one place in the world where my energy slows down, where the hamster wheel in my brain goes a little bit slower. And there's something, I don't know, the ocean doesn't do it to me. It's the lake that does it, the rock bottom lake. What are lakes like? Is Lake Tahoe rock bottom? Like, can you see the bottom?
You can see the bottom. The reason why Lake Tahoe is so turquoise and blue is because the bottom is sand. Like it's like light colored sand. And so that's why it's so light. The sun reflects on it. And so the lake we grew up on in Jersey, the bottom of the lake is muck.
That's how most lakes are.
Yeah, that's how most lakes are, especially on the East Coast. And so that's why the lake doesn't look super blue. It's because the sun doesn't have anything to reflect off of it. So yeah, it's a sandy bottom. There's some rocky areas, but you can see down 20, 30 feet in some areas. Like it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a different kind of lake. That's how it is in Maine too. And I've heard Minnesota is like that because that's where my husband's from, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But there is something about that. I think cabin life in general can help you slow down. But I have found that even amongst those cabins, being on the water, because it makes you want to go like nowhere.
I know.
When I'm at the other cabin, I like want to go hiking. I want to go for a walk. But when I'm on the lake, I just want to like be on the lake.
That's enough. It's enough.
That's it. I just want to stay there. Yeah.
I know. Okay. It really has that feeling because Tahoe is also a basin. So it's like these mountains and then the lake is at the bottom of the basin. And so to get into Tahoe, you have to go up over, there's only four roads in. You go up and over these passes to drop into the basin. And there's just this feeling like, we don't do it a lot because we're here now, but when we would leave and come back, and I know guests tell me this all the time, like you just get this feeling when you drop into the basin and you see the lake. It's like, it's that energy you're talking about. It's the life, you know?
How did your relationship with the Lake Tahoe community change when you moved there full time? Because I do think there's this weird energy of like outsiders buying cabins in really desirable places and then traveling back and forth. And some do a better job than others at engaging with the community. But how did your relationship change once you moved there for good?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I'm really grateful that our friends here welcomed us with open arms and that we were able to build that community before we lived here, because I think a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of hate in Tahoe for the Bay Area. Like Bay Area people come up here with their Teslas and they don't have chains and they don't have four-wheel drive and they block the roads and they're disrespectful. And so they never gave us that judgment. What's interesting is that a lot of our good friends who live here are from Long Island, New Jersey, Connecticut, New York. And so there is a big like East Coast population here. And so, I mean, Tahoe is a mixing pot. There's not a lot of people that were like born and raised here. Everyone's from somewhere. And so they never gave us that judgment. And so I really appreciated that because that definitely exists in some of the neighborhoods, especially with some of the like older community members that just don't want outsiders. They don't want to share Tahoe. And so that was kind of the foundation. Now that we live here, we've just deepened that. Like we had this one community with this group of friends and they were really close. And we've kind of now like tapped into like, we have like multiple groups of like, we've never had so many friends like this since we really grew where we grew up in New Jersey. And so it's been, there's a lot of other people like us that are younger that moved here to pursue that lifestyle and like, you know, are just starting a family or, you know, want to have that in the future. And like, there's just a lot of other people and couples and women that are like in the same position as me. And so I know it's like hard to make adult friendships, but like Kevin and I were joking the other day, he's like, I feel like we've made too many friends. Like we got invited to, like,
how do we keep up?
Too many parties on one weekend. Like I can only handle one social engagement a weekend and I'm tapped out. And I'm like, he's like, we have too many friends. I'm like,
life is so hard. Forgive me if I don't feel too bad for you.
Right. And we lived in the Bay Area for 10 years and we've made some very good friends in the Bay Area, but it's not like, it's such a large spread out area that you don't like we have friends right here in the community that are like, I have a couple extra burgers tonight. Do you want to come over for dinner?
Come over. Yes.
Yes. Like love that.
I lived in the Bay Area briefly. I was at an accelerator there.
Oh, no way.
And now, granted, that's like down. Ours was located at the time. I think it was in Mountain View. It might have been.
Yeah, down in Silicon Valley. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like further down. But we couldn't find any place to live. So we lived in the city. I'm trying to remember the neighborhood. It's way up on a hill. I should know this. But it felt like most of the people in our accelerator lived down in Silicon Valley, but we lived in the city. And I loved living in the city because I felt a little separated, but it was so hard to drive anywhere. Like it just felt like everything was so spread out. And it also felt like, and maybe this is just because I was running a startup, but like everything was about startups. And it was like, hustle, hustle, hustle. Like we're working all the time. If we're like, if we're out to coffee, it's because we're with an investor, we're with an advisor, like, and that is such a different energy to your point that I can do that. I can be very driven, but then it brings out that side in me. Right. And I was like, I can't do this. So the day after demo day, I got on a plane at like 7 a.m. and I was back on the East Coast. I was like, I just can't. I'll fundraise from a distance. I know that's not what you want me to do, but like, I can't.
A lot of my startup clients do that. Like I think of, you're reminding me of one who, you know, she says she's technically like headquartered in San Francisco and like she goes there a lot, but she technically lives in Florida where it's a lot cheaper. And I know she's positioning that to investors. Like, listen, I can get on a plane and be to San Francisco, but like, my salary that I require is much lower because I live not in San Francisco. And so it's,
I felt the same way. I was like, you don't want me to stay out here to fundraise, but like, I'm essentially fundraising by going back home in the house that I'm paying $600 a month mortgage for.
Right.
And then my salary can be that much lower. Like no problem. I don't know. I think, and Durham has become a little bit of a startup hub over here. So anyway, I got out of the startup world because it was too much for me. But you are, however, you got into the perfect position where you're not running a startup. You're running your own business that consults startups. Can you tell folks a little bit about what you specialize in? Because that's going to lead us to the next part. And I think that background will help make make some of the future things make sense.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I'm a corporate sales gal. And so essentially, you know, I started in startups and then worked for some pretty big media companies and then moved into tech, worked at LinkedIn in San Francisco. And so I had, you know, 12, 13 years of, you know, being an account executive and then being a sales manager, being a sales director, being a VP of sales, like running sales teams. And so what was interesting, I started in startups and then ended up at these really well-oiled machines like LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn's known to be one of the top 50 sales organizations in the world. And so I started noticing there was a lot of me going back to my startup friends and being like, hey, like they've really figured out the code on like how to set quotas or like how to build strong sales culture or like, have you ever heard of a spiff or a sales incentive? Like here's how they performance manage here. And so like there were so many aha moments from like what I learned at a really well-oiled established machine and like wanting to take that back to startups. And so I was like probably sometime right in or in the pandemic where I was like, I thought I was making up a job. I'm like, can I make a business out of this, out of like taking my experience and like bringing it back to startups who just like, you don't know what you don't know. You can't be an expert in everything. And people that lead startups are experts in the solution that they're building and the industry they work in. And so I thought I was making up a job. I started putting it out to my network. What's interesting is that all of my like colleagues and mentors at LinkedIn and that I had met in the corporate space were like, I don't know, Janelle, this is really risky. Like I would only give it 3 months. Like, I don't know about this. There was a lesson in that because as I started to talk to other people, I found sales consultants in San Francisco that were doing this. And I reached out to them on LinkedIn and they got on a call with me and they're like, this is totally a job. Here's how much I charge for it. Here's what I do. Here's how I get clients. And I was like, done.
Thank you.
Thank you. I feel really grateful for those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare when you reach out for help like that, not everyone, let me take that back. People can view it as competition rather than just collaboration. I feel like you can find that a little bit in the short-term rental space too. If you're in the same region, you view each other as competition. And the minute for me that clicked and changed, that we're not competition, we could all help each other, so much more rewarding. So it's amazing that they jumped right into that.
I know. And I think it's important if you want to kind of take that path. It's like, you want to avoid reaching out and being like, I want to pick your brain. It's like, hey, I spoke to this person and like, I'm trying to build this thing. And they said that you've built this thing and that you've done it really well. And I'm so impressed by what I've seen. Like, is there any chance you'd be ever willing to spend 15 minutes with me? And I promise I'll like make it worth your time. And then like, I try to always like give back in some way to them. Sometimes actually with a lot of these connections, they all like love Tahoe or want a snowboard. I'm like, I'm happy to hook you up with a discount on our vacation rental, like as a thank you for spending time with me. So I always try to offer something, but like I would have never started without those people in the early days. And so today what I do is essentially I partner with early stage startups and I help them scale and optimize their sales teams. And so typically my clients it's founder-led sales teams. So they've built a product, they've got a couple rounds of funding, they've gotten product market fit, and now they got a round of funding and they have to scale. And they're like, how do I scale? Like, do I hire a head of sales or an account executive? Do I set quotas? How do I pay? How do I build sales culture? Like, what's a sales process? A lot of them don't have a sales background. They tend to be technical founders. And so they're like, they don't know the basics of sales. They don't know what a discovery call is or what a demo is or how to negotiate. And so it is really fun work. It kind of feels like a playground for me because it's like, I get to take all this knowledge and like, I love educating and teaching and sharing and like inspiring, and I'm a good cheerleader. And so it's just like this perfect combination of skills for me where like I get to give back to startups, but then like they're getting something that apparently is valuable and they keep hiring me back and passing me on.
Oh my God.
So
I just remember in the accelerator, it's like we were all at like slightly different stages, right? And some of us were still trying to figure out product market fit. Some people were there and were like already done around. And so we're just trying to figure out how to spend that money in a way that made sense for their growth. And this is what people I think outside the startup world don't often realize, is that startups are fucking hard from start to finish. It's like they never get easy, right? At the very beginning, you're like trying to like create a product from scratch and trying to figure out if anyone will actually use this product. So that's just like insane because it's like very hard to do. And then if you find product market fit, you think, great, now I've got a business. And it's like, no, now you need to.
Because of challenges.
And this is what people don't realize about startups versus like brick and mortar businesses or lifestyle businesses or whatever you want to call them. But like the expectation is growth quickly. People are investing in your business and they want you to grow so fast because that's how they get the return on their money. Yep. So the minute you raise a round, it's like, it's not great. We have a cushion financially. It's like, no,
it's go time.
Spend that money. It's go time. You need to hire like however many people all at once. And so I just think that this role is so interesting because everyone I worked with, we knew our products well, we knew our clients, but regardless of stage, we knew our users really well.
Right.
But sales, it was like, I don't know anything about sales. So to have someone who knows sales come in and then help you like really figure out how to master that is both exciting and like, you don't have
people get scared of sales, you know, like you said, I don't know anything about sales. So it's intimidating and people think it's this like cheesy car salesman thing. And it's not like sales is a conversation. Sales is the art of solving people's problems. If they have a problem that you have a solution for, awesome. If they don't, goodbye. We're not going to spend any more time together. Like there doesn't need to be this pressure or this cheesiness. Right. And so, yeah, it's just really rewarding work. Cause you're right. Like that, your mentality is what most of the founders I work with have is like, you know, it's like, I've got this pressure now that I have to scale. How do I do it? What do I do?
Yes. I learned that what you just said, when I was in college, I was a street canvasser for a summer. You've seen them, you know them, you know, hi, do you have a second to save the environment? Yeah, that was me. Okay. And at first I was just like, this is a summer gig. But then by the end of it, I was the number one street canvasser in the country because I just viewed it as a science. And I was like, okay. And one of the biggest things they taught us was you have three types of people. You have yeses, you have nos, and you have maybes. Yeses and nos, you need to spend as little time as possible on them. Even if they're a yes, get their money and be done with them because you only have so much time to be selling.
Yeah.
So every second that you're wasting on a yes or a no is energy that you could be putting into someone who's a maybe.
Yeah, but I think that's where you have the most leverage, I would say. Because someone who's a yes is probably going to be a yes anyway, no matter what you do. Someone who's a no, a lot of energy to potentially shift them, but it may be, you know, that's fun.
But I like thinking about it as fit now, even with my own business or with the cabins of just like, we're not for everyone. And if you're not a good fit, you don't need to follow us on Instagram. You don't need to book a stay. Like that's totally fine.
Yep.
But then I can spend my energy talking to the people who are a maybe or a yes and make more progress there.
Yep.
You said something in your pre-interview form. And you said sales really comes down to two things, communication and positioning. Can you break down each one of them for us? I'm guessing that a lot of people listening to this love their cabins, love hosting, but also are probably uncomfortable with sales. So I just think this is such a fascinating perspective for us.
Yeah.
So talk to us about communication and positioning.
Yeah. Okay. So communication, this is so key. And I do think this is one of the areas where I shine as a host in terms of taking the experience that I have in sales and applying it to hosting. But you know, a lot of people think about the design of their space and like making, you know, it have awesome amenities and all these things, but you don't realize that like your communication is also playing a really big role in how someone is experiencing your vacation rental. And so like, if you're sending them like, this is the classic thing I see is, you know, these emails are like, you know, they're like 10 paragraphs, there's no bullets, there's no conciseness, they're send in too many house rule. It's just like confusing. No one can follow. And so you're like, you're not able to build that relationship. And so I think how you communicate, like your standard communication, we have the thanks for booking email. We check in a week before, we check in the morning after they've checked in to say like, how was your night sleep? Is there anything we could do to make your stay more comfortable? We check in after their stay. Is there any feedback we could have done to like make your stay better? And so I think that communication is really important, but then there's we all know there's the communication that happens outside of those scheduled standard messages, which is like the guest has a problem or there's an issue. And so I think what I learned in sales, and this is like, I think a lot of vacation owners could benefit from this, is like, even if the person, like the customer's always right, even if you feel like they're wrong and they've done something that's really rubbed you the wrong way and really bothered you, like you still have to greet them with a professional smile and send them on their way. And so I think that's a really key kind of differentiator is, you know, I would try to respond very promptly because that alone is an experience. Even if what you say isn't perfect, being able to respond quickly. Like we just had a guest this morning who was like, is there any chance we could get a late checkout? I know it's a back-to-back and probably not, but I had to call my cleaner. I was like, hey, I'm responding right away. I don't think it's likely, but I will contact my cleaner and let you know. And so like, even though I didn't have the answer she wanted in the end, because I like responded promptly and got on it, and it gave her that positive experience. And she's like, thanks so much. You're so awesome. This was amazing. I'm like, wow, all I did was like ask my cleaner for a stay and extension on checkout and like got denied. Like, you know, so it's I think communication is really key because that you got to remember that is a part of how your guest is experiencing their stay. What is the messaging they're receiving from you before, during, and after? Is it concise? Is it compelling? Does it have personality? All that stuff.
Yes. Why do you think that mindset the customer is always right? We've heard that our whole life. As the customers mostly, right? Why do you think that seems to be missing in the world of Airbnbs, because I agree with you. And all you have to do is spend one day in an Airbnb Facebook group to see exactly how hosts talk about guests. And like, and sometimes you see messages that they have sent to guests and I'm just like, what is happening? Why do you think so many hosts are missing that?
I don't know. You know, I see this a lot in the Tahoe groups I'm in. And I don't know if this is just like a generalization, but I just think like, thank goodness I have the business and professional experience to be able to manage this and understand this. Because I think a lot of these folks that I see, at least in Tahoe, that are like struggling with guests or fighting with guests or bitching about guests is like, they're not really thinking about it like a business. They're not really thinking about them like a customer. And yeah, they're just not really thinking about it business minded. They're thinking about it emotionally. Like, this person has upset me. And what you learn in sales, like, oh my gosh, you're trying to close deals and someone's like, yeah, I'm going to sign this and we're going to get it done right before the end of the quarter. And then they don't. Like, you can't call them and be like, screw you, I hate you, never come back. Like, you have to just accept like, well, they didn't sign the contract. Let me see if I can salvage the deal. Like, you can't let your emotions get in the way of it. And so I think it's hard if you don't have that experience and you've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and love into your place. Like, it's hard to not be triggered. I think you get triggered.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of some, you know, unfortunate guest experiences. We're starting to work with influencers. We're having some really fun, unfortunate experiences there, but like, you can't get mad. It's just like, it's just the business. And, you know, this is actually my first job in life dealing with the general public. Like, I was never like a waitress or, and so like, I'm not dealing with businesses, but it's still the same thing. It's you're dealing with the general population. Like, you know, it is what it is. So you got to really, you have to control what you can control and be mindful that you're not being triggered and putting emotion in your communication.
The triggering is normal.
Yeah.
How you then filter that before responding to guests or maybe ranting on Instagram or in a Facebook group is like, that's where the work is. But I think it's really interesting because all the communication you just talked about is all once someone has already booked. And I think that's a really good point that when it comes to vacation rentals, sales is not just getting them to book,
right?
Because getting them to come back, getting them to tell other people about it, and at least in my perspective, and you could correct me, you're way more an expert in sales, but all of that is part of sales,
right?
Present and future sales. And so that communication you're talking about and making their experience better, you are actively selling the next day. You are actively selling them spreading the word about what you've created.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me about positioning.
Positioning. So let's see, positioning. I mean, when you think about it in sales, positioning to me is really like understanding what someone's problems and pain points are and positioning what you offer as a solution to that. And if you can't position what you offer as a solution, then it's not a fit. And so, you know, this is something I've been a lot more mindful of, you know, as I go into 2024, I'm trying to really optimize for our guest avatars. And so one of the things that I realized, you know, I think when you build a vacation rental, you know, you build it originally for you. Like, this is going to be for Kevin and I and other couples. And what we found is that a lot of our guests are families traveling with their kids. And like, we don't have kids yet. So I don't understand those pain points, but I've been spending a lot of time asking the parents that stay, like, what could we do better to make the stay easier and more convenient for you? And so I think that's kind of an example of how positioning can apply to vacation rentals is like, if most of your guests are families with kids, how are you positioning your stay as family friendly? And so like, this is a new journey we're on this year, trying to position ourselves as more family friendly, but it goes beyond just like checking the box on Airbnb that you have a pack and play, right? It's like, I want photography of that experience. I want influencers to come with their family and I really want to paint the picture so that it's really attractive to those families that travel with their kids and like, oh, I have to lug this pack and play and like the baby bath. And like, it's even been little things like just having plates and cups and utensils that are kid friendly, right? Having some toys
and cups.
Right. Like,
I don't have them like sippy cups. Keep them from spilling stuff on your carpets.
Exactly. And so I think that, you know, when it comes to positioning your vacation rental, I think it's like really understanding who is your guest avatar? Like, who is your ideal guest avatar? Who is staying most often? And then making sure that you're positioning your amenities and your experience as something that's going to be really appealing to them and sort of solve some of those problems and pain points that they experience when they travel with their families. Same thing when they travel with their pets. We're in the early stages of going pet friendly, dog friendly. So you and I will have to have a talk about it because I just feel like we're missing out and it's silly.
She's celebrating right behind me.
I saw you.
Like, what, pet friendly? Are we going to Tahoe? What's happening?
So I think that's another thing. I'm just in the middle of thinking, like, what do pet parents want when they travel? What makes it special? And I'm realizing, like, little things like having a dog biscuit made by a local bakery or something is like such a special touch that people love. And like, it just differentiates you and helps you position yourself as, you know, a stay that's catered to that guest avatar.
This is such a good point. It's not just because our cabin in Boone is family friendly, but I have never once had any photos taken with a pack and play out with a kid there. And it's interesting because you think about on Instagram how many like bikini influencers you've seen, right? Who are positioning God knows what, that maybe you'll get to like date this girl if you come to the cat. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe your body will suddenly look this good. I'm sorry. This is my current pet peeve. But I've never seen a pack and play on Instagram. So I feel like this is a missed opportunity for family-friendly cabins to have influencers come with families and really show that experience as well as the other experiences that people can have.
Yeah, for sure.
It might not be as sexy on Instagram, a kid in a pack and play, but damn, if you're a parent who doesn't want to have to pack that in their car, that's probably... Yeah. More compelling.
Make it Instagrammable, like we store. So I don't, for people that come without kids, I don't want them to feel like this is like some crazy kid zone. And so everything is really neatly organized in these cute little baskets that have our logo that say the Tahoe House Kids and the Tahoe House Baby. And it's like stacked in shelves in the bunk room. But I did get this like Instagrammable like kids tent with string lights. And so I can take the basket of kids toys and set up the little tent. And so like, I did just post a reel of that and it performed quite, performed better than I thought it would. I think because it like looks like this magical little experience. And then in the caption, I listed all the amenities that maybe aren't as sexy to see, but we did just get like a very on brand pack and play. It's all like matte black. And so I'm dying to get an influencer with an infant so I can get them like in the master suite, in the primary suite, like picking their baby up out of that or reading them up. We have like all the cute little Tahoe baby books, like, oh, just like such a good photo op. Like you're selling an experience. And so like,
you are sharing so many good ideas. I'm literally like, we should do this for Cozy Rock. Is not super family friendly, but for the other ones, we should totally do this.
Well, I didn't think our place was family friendly. I'm like, it has a hot tub. It has a fireplace. Like it's close to a main road, but like, again, I don't have kids. And so like what I've realized is like, parents still want a really cool, Instagrammable, elevated experience, even if they have kids. And so like, I've been surprised that even though I didn't think it was a kid-friendly property, so many people were staying with their kids and like lugging all of their own stuff, you know, so we could only make it easier and more appealing for them.
I love that your reaction to finding out that people were coming with kids, knowing that was a blind spot for you just because you don't have kids, and then asking them, like actively reaching out and being like, okay, what could we have done? Because feedback is really hard to come by with guests. They really don't want to be critical. And sometimes they might not have, they might be so used to traveling with all this stuff that they don't even think it's possible that someone would want to provide it for them.
Right.
But by you reaching out, you were learning that. And now what was once a blind spot is now it sounds like actually an area of strength for your cabin.
Yeah, I know. We actually just got a couple of bookings. This made my heart so happy. They're like, we're so excited to come. Like someone just booked for August. And he's like, we have a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old and an infant. Like I was so excited to see you guys have these amenities. And I was just like, wow, like that's, you know, getting month on month cash flow is fun. But like those messages, like, let's be honest, like that's really what keeps me hooked and keeps me excited to keep serving is like when you get that feedback.
But speaking of month by month revenue, I'd like to do just a little breakdown of your first 4 years in business to look at exactly how you've grown with one cabin. Because I think there's a misconception that a lot of folks, you have to scale if you want to make more money.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to share your first 4 year numbers. Yeah,
go for it.
In year one, you grossed $25,000.
Yep.
In year two, you grossed $45,000.
Yep.
So you almost doubled between year one and year two.
Yep.
In year three, you grossed $70,000. Again, you added another $25,000. Yep. And then now in year four, you have almost doubled again at $130,000. And so I have so many questions. I have to believe this is your background, but seeing numbers like that and the growth without adding cabins, like this is just the same cabin.
Yeah.
Break that down for us. Like how do you, when you reflect on each year, what did you do each year to continue that growth?
Yeah. Okay. So I think the first leaps, and this is something that I'm really passionate about, you know, when we first bought the cabin or the house, I didn't really know, I didn't think I knew what I was doing. And it was already in a vacation rental and it had some bookings and it had a property manager. And so we just decided, like, let's just keep that rolling and work with the property manager. And so that's why that revenue really was so low in the first 1 to 2 years, is because we had a property manager. And so two things I think to be mindful of that is, one, like, depending on, like, we only put 10% down on the house, like, our mortgage isn't super low. And so, like, the property manager taking 25, 30%, like, that was most of our profit. And so, like, yep, making that profit. And two, I'm sorry, like, no one is going to care about your property more than you. Like, we've interviewed all the property managers, we've had experience with different ones. And like, we were just getting really frustrated. Like, we were terrified to self-manage, but we were so frustrated that we were coming up to the house and things were broken. We weren't told. Like, yep, we had a guest complain about the hot tub. And I remember calling the property manager and I'm like, why isn't the hot tub okay? And they're like, I don't know. Like, the guy came, like, here's his number. And so I call the hot tub guy and he's like, dude, the property management company didn't even tell me that I should be going to the house. Like, you're not even on my, like, I haven't even been there.
Did they think you wouldn't find out?
I don't know.
The property manager, like,
I think they just, I think there is a profile of people that most often use property managers and like, they're not, they're just like happy to, like us in the beginning, we were happy to like pass over the reins. And like, when we got that check at the end of the year, we were like, this is amazing. Like, we were just happy to like cover some of the expenses, you know? And so again, like, weren't really thinking of it business minded. So
until that frustration set in. So then you took over. What were some of the first changes that you made that led to so much growth?
Yeah. So finally, with us managing it, we were able to hire our own cleaners and communicate directly with the cleaners. And that was really the first leap we took, because now we can control the amenities. Like, I added robes, I added a coffee bar, we added, you know, the little toilet paper stickers with our logo on it. We, you know, we just were able to add all these amenities. And all of a sudden, I had control over how those amenities were set out, how they were taken care of, how they were, you know, staged and styled in the house. And so I think that was that first leap. The other gap with the property manager, like I said, no one's going to care about your property like you, which means they're not going to market it like you. Our listing had typos in it. And I, the amount of time, Janice, that I spent sending emails trying to fix these typos, and they're like, no, it's not getting bookings because of the algorithm. I'm like, can you at least fix the typos? Like, so having control over that, right? How we positioned the listing, the photos we had, you know, immediately updated the photos. They had these like super crappy old photos, really crappy text that like wasn't written well, had typos, and like didn't really sell the experience like we thought it should be sold. And so that was like the second leap. And that was scary. Like, I'm really grateful our cleaner that worked for the property manager at the time, she saw our frustration and she's like, dude, like, you know, you could do this yourself. And I was like, there's no way I can do this myself. And she's like, trust me, you can do it yourself. I'll work with you. Leave the property manager. I'll work with you. And so that was really like, we were frustrated and we knew we had this cleaner. And then as soon as we fired
a good cleaner, to be clear, is everything. Leaving a property manager, that is the biggest thing, is having a good
cleaner. So get this, we leave the property manager. We're like, all right, we got our cleaner. She knows our property. She's going to work with us. She quits because they move. And so we're like, no. So we had to like do this whole interview process and find a new cleaner. But like, again, found a great cleaner. And so that, like, having that control, I think was the first kind of leap that we took in that revenue.
So then you mentioned amenities and adding amenities. And I was looking at your website in preparation for this and found, hold on, it's in a different window, but found on your website, there was a link to additional amenities for guests that you have kind of built in. Where did this go? Hold on.
We have, like, an unstoppable guest add-ons. It's funny. There was a startup in the space. I'm forgetting the name. I think it was called Atlist, maybe. And they had reached out to, they were looking for like hosts early on to get on their platform. And so it's basically a platform for your guests to purchase add-ons. And so I had lined up all these add-ons. The company went out of business, but there were two add-ons that people were buying all the time that I have dialed in with local vendors that are super easy for me to execute. And so we've kept those two. It's a charcuterie and wine pairing, and then a grocery pre-stock.
Those are the two that I have questions about. It's interesting when I saw your website, because literally just yesterday, and I'm sure some of our listeners got this too, but I got an email from Airbnb asking to take a survey. And whenever they do that, I always do it because I feel like they don't advocate for hosts enough. So I'm always like, here's my voice if you're going to listen. And it was like, all it was about was offering add-ons. So Airbnb is clearly thinking about how to build these things into their platform, which I will admit has been my one hesitation, is it becomes one more thing to manage. and a ball that I could potentially drop and ruin an experience for someone. And that feels stressful to me. How are you doing it logistically that you are able to offer? Do you just connect them with the charcuterie person, or do you actually do all the work? They order it through you. Are you upcharging it so that you're making money off of it? How do you make this work?
Yeah. So basically, I think the key is you need to find local partners. And so like I have a local little like wine and cheese shop that does the charcuterie platters. And essentially like you kind of position it like a win-win-win. Like the charcuterie that they order, it has their branded sticker on it. And so like they're getting that exposure. And in fact, in the add-ons, we tell them where it's from. And so like that local business is getting that exposure. Our guest is getting that great experience. And then, you know, we're able to offer that experience, which differentiates us. And so we have an agreement with these local vendors where they give us a slight, like a locals discount so that we're not like, because it's hard. How much can you upcharge a charcuterie platter?
Like, right. That's why I'm wondering.
No one's going to buy it, right? And so like the margin isn't huge, right? And that was what I learned, and probably why that company, I think it was called Atlas, went out of business, is because there isn't enough margin in it. It's not a profit center, right? But I think having the amenities is a differentiator that enhances the guest experience. And so it's worth it. And so basically we have like a super tiny little margin, like maybe, I don't know, $15 on a charcuterie platter. And like, that is like me calling my gal over at the place and being like, this is the order. They want red wine or they want sparkling. That's what you get to pick, your wine type how many people. And, you know, that's it. And then they handle the delivery. So they have our door code and they will literally like, we'll give them a code during the turnover and they'll go to the house and they'll put the charcuterie in the fridge or leave it out and put the wine out with glasses. Like they'll set it up for me.
What a treat. What about the grocery pre-stock?
Yeah, same thing. So we have someone locally who's willing to do that. I've also played around with.
Oh, it's just an individual who goes grocery shopping?
Yeah, like you can use your cleaner for it. Like that's, I think if you're a remote host, you really need a cleaner who's like willing to, like when we interviewed for cleaners, when we were remote hosts and not living here, we were looking for cleaners that would do a little bit more for an hourly rate. And so like, hey, if we need something like picked up from the post office or like a guest has a need or like it's a guest's birthday and we want you to like pick up some balloons, like, can we agree to an hourly rate? Are you interested in that work? And so I think you'll find that a lot of your cleaners will be open to that if you find the right ones. And then, you know, through HostGPO, we have Instacart for business. We get like, I think we get it for free and we get cash back. So we use Instacart a lot too. And so if that person isn't available, I will place the order on Instacart. I'll have it delivered to the house and then I'll have the cleaners unpack it.
Okay. See, that's exactly what I do when we go to the cabin. When we cross the bridge into Maine, I go onto Instacart and I like place our order so that it's there when we get there. Yeah. But I get like 5 messages afterwards of like, this item was out of stock. What do you want instead? I would feel intimidated by the idea of like making those choices for someone else. But maybe what I'm hearing you say is that like even an imperfect order is better than no order.
Yeah.
Because they still have a fridge stocked with groceries and you just do your best.
And remember, it's just a starter pack. Like it's, you know, it's eggs, milk, bread, butter, some veggies, some fruit. Like it's just so that when you get to the house, like, I don't know if you've experienced this in your vacations, like you get to the house, you drop off your suitcase and then you're like, oh, now we have to go get our supplies. We have to go get alcohol. We have to go get food. And so like when you arrive, you just want to like chill and enjoy it and like settle in. And so I think it allows for that. And, you know, I had kind of stolen the language from Atlas when they set up our site. Like they were the one that created this like basic grocery bundle. And so the only thing I ask is, are there any like special requests or dietary preferences? And like, so long as it's in that price range, like I'll swap. Like some people are like, we don't like eggs. We'd like smoked salmon. Like, sure, I'll do that. You know,
fancy upgrade. How do they actually place the order? I'm just saying if someone like me wanted to do this, how do they – you do direct bookings and Airbnb. Is this offer – like how do you offer this?
Yeah, it's manual. I wish that there was a better way to do it. And that's why I'm surprised you said Airbnb is offering add-ons, because I will say it's very difficult to process the payment through Airbnb. And so essentially when someone requests it, you know, through our direct bookings website, which is new, we haven't had anyone request it yet, but we would probably just use the website to do like an upcharge. But for Airbnb – we essentially just do it as a, like a request, you know, you can like send or request money to a guest. And so we just do a request. We put the screenshot of what it is and the amount and they pay it. But oftentimes guests cannot find that request and it doesn't live anywhere in Airbnb. And so I think it goes to people's like junk and spam folders to whatever email address they have linked to Airbnb. Like it doesn't come as an Airbnb message. And so we have had a lot of difficulties where I've had to pivot to Zelle or Venmo because I can't figure out how to process it on like the guest can't.
Which is a mistake on their part, because the minute you have their Venmo, it becomes like, why do we need to operate within the platform?
I know. And so I wish they made that easier. Like that sounds exciting that they sent the survey, because maybe they're actually like, where I want these add-ons is when the guest is checking out.
Agreed.
Right.
Like if unfortunately the way they worded the survey, there wasn't a lot of room for me to like add thoughts. And a lot of the stuff they were suggesting was like laundry service. And I'm like, well, we have a washer and dryer. So this is not something I'd ever.
Yeah.
Nobody needs that. And maybe there are, maybe in cities where you're traveling for work, you do.
Right.
I don't know different markets, but the grocery one was nowhere on that survey. And that is the one when I saw it on your add-ons, I'm just like, absolutely. We're planning a trip to, we're going skiing in Jackson Hole next week.
Right.
And literally today, Sean was like, we need to make our grocery list so that we can stop on the way in. And if I could just add that on, game changing.
Exactly. So again, it's just all those little conveniences and amenities when you think about positioning and experience and creating a unique experience, like showing up to a place and having a charcuterie platter and a bottle of wine and some groceries in the fridge. Like you can literally pop the bottle and head into the hot tub and start your vacation from the second you arrive, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned earlier adding like branded bathrobes and things like that once you got rid of your property manager and you could do that. That is one thing that really stands out about your property is the amount of branding that exists within it. I'm guessing this comes from your background in sales. I've seen like some branding in cabins before, and we have like a candle that's branded Cozy Rock and like small things like that. But yours is like the pillows, the bathrobes, it's everywhere. Talk us through when you realized that was important and then how you went implementing that and give us more examples. What does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when you're trying to create a brand, like pulling that name through and really making it memorable, that's one of the ways I do that. Right. And so we do have a lot of branded items. It started with the robes and coasters and toilet paper stickers. Then we added the pillows. What else do we have that's branded? We have coffee mugs that with our logo on it. And it's interesting, you know, my friend Karen from Cool House Cabin, who has been on this podcast,
yes,
she actually set up she has like a shoppable shelf in her cabin. And I've been thinking about doing that. I don't know that it's worth the time for me, but we get so many guests. Like we also have linen sprays that have our logo on it. And so these things magically go missing. And I think
I was going to ask you that, because when it's branded, it suddenly becomes more tempting and maybe more like you think it's okay to take it.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, again, the customer's always right. So like, I'm not upset. Like, I'm like, great. They're taking something home with my logo on it. And so like during the pandemic, we got hand sanitizers that were branded. And so like,
good one.
You are supposed to take that with you because it's little. So I guess, you know, people get confused, but yeah, I've been thinking of like, I don't know if it'd be worth my time, but I just think people tend to like those things. They want to buy a pillow. They want to bring some coasters home. They want to bring a mug home. And so,
you know,
I'm trying to think more like, how can I add things that people can take homes so that they remember us and have that, and it's not like something that wasn't intended to be.
Yes. Taken. May I recommend koozies? That's my personal favorite because I'm a koozie collector.
Ooh.
But although Sean gets mad if they leave it in the drawer, he's like, they didn't want our koozies. And so I don't think koozies are for everyone, but I do think they're pretty cheap to like mass produce.
Yeah.
So we put them in all of our gift bags, but also I'd never hesitate to give them away to people.
Yeah. Ooh, we need koozies. Cause yeah, you know, it's a challenge when you have a hot tub, you don't want people to bring glass. And we've had issues where like if they break glass in the hot tub, you're talking drain and fill. It's a much more expensive, you know, turnover. And so koozies kind of in like incentivizes like use cans with a koozie and not our glassware.
That's right. That's right. But this brings me to another financial question since you're open to talking about it. But how do you think about profit margins? Because I calculate them very minimally, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. I look at overall profit per month, but I don't obsess about it. And like our gift bags, what is the profit margin or what am I losing or whatever?
Yeah.
But in a high-end property, I really struggle with this because I just like throw the money back into the cabin. Whenever I never hesitate to buy anything that I think is going to make a guest experience better, I just throw it. So how do you balance the kind of growth that you've seen and the profit that comes with that while also really creating a high-end experience for people?
Yeah. I mean, we have invested a lot back into the cabin. And I think that why last year was so huge is you have to remember, like we were renting the cabin for the summers and winters in the peak seasons, and we weren't renting it in the off seasons. And so like that's another reason why we had that big jump in 2023 is all of a sudden we're renting year round. And so, yeah, I think that has changed things and it's given us more profit. Cause previously we were just happy to have our expenses covered. And I had the mindset of you were like, anything I could think of, like, ooh, let's get better pot holders and like, ooh, we need a full spice rack that's like branded. Like the sky was the limit, right? Like I would spend, put all the money and put it back in the house and like, we're kind of breaking even. So last year was the first year where we had that profit. And like Kevin and I kind of had a conversation where he's like, Janelle, like you've added all of these things, like we shouldn't need anything else now. And so I've tried to be very minimal in 2023 and 2024 in what I add. Like I wait until something needs to be replaced. And so I look at the monthly profit. I get excited about the monthly profit. And as I look at it, I have this other category for like, you know, the way I break down my P&L is we've got our bookings and then we've got the cleaning fees and taxes and utilities. Yep. And there's this like other bucket. And the other bucket is basically Amazon orders and like other fun things that I buy. And you start to realize how that impacts your profit. And I'm like, did I really need to upgrade the pot holders? You know, like, did I really need that
in my life? Just,
like me wanting to be fun and spend money because like I see the money sitting in the account and I see this cute thing that I want. And so we've been trying
to have a little bit more different
resistance.
Like, yes, that is where it's different when you have a full-time job. Because I find it hard to imagine that people are supporting themselves completely off of short-term rentals because we put so much back into the cabins. But then I'm like, maybe I'd operate it differently if I needed that profit to be my payment. Yeah. But when I have a paycheck coming in from my full-time job, then any extra money I'm making over here, I'm like, great. And once I hit that savings goal and we have like a nice like safety net in case we need it, it's like, I don't need this money. Why not get this next? Like now I'm like, why aren't our bathrobes branded?
I know. It was the other day I saw there's a cabin that I really admire online and she added towel warmers. And I was like, we need towel warmers. Then I was like, wait, Janelle, like we don't need towel warmers right now. There's not even a place to put it. Like chill out. Yep. You don't need to spend $120 on that. So
But then part of my brain is like, it's only $120 for like towel warmers that will elevate their experience. Okay, sold.
Part of what I've been doing, because, you know, Kev is like the handyman, he's the maintenance guy, but I really manage the business. And so what we've learned in our relationship is like, I don't give him a lot of visibility into that. So I'm trying to be better about that. So what we do, we go to breakfast every Friday. And every 4 weeks on that Friday is when I present the numbers from the previous month. And so like, I kind of feel challenged to show like, I increased revenue and I decreased expenses. And so it's like, this is like the sales mind in me. Like that's fun and exciting to chase. And so it's like, what are the bare minimum that I need to invest in? You know, we get sheets that are stained that have to be replaced. You know, we always need coffee, toilet paper, paper towels. Like those are essentials. But for the other things, like we have so many amenities now, like it's enough.
Is it necessary?
Yeah. Though I did just go and spend like, I don't know, $500 on baby stuff. But like, again, because we have a lot of families coming. And so I felt that that was worthwhile, but our February profit margin was impacted because I made all those purchases in February. And so I like, when you start to look at that,
when I'm looking at my monthly stuff and then all of a sudden I'm in the red 1 month and I'm like, what happened? And I'm like, okay, yes, I invested in some big things. It's fine. Right. But my numbers can vary so greatly from month to month, not necessarily based on our bookings.
I know.
It's more based on what am I investing in? And, and one of our cabins, we're getting ready to maybe think about selling. And so we're doing a whole bunch, like we replaced the roof. We're just doing a whole bunch of like big work on the house. And that has thrown off all my numbers in a way that I'm like, it stresses you out a little bit, even though it's hard.
I know. And I wonder, you know, if I think back to when I was running a P&L for my startup and for my businesses, like there are certain expenses that you will spread out. And so like, I'm thinking like another big expense is when we had, you know, we hired famous cabin photographers who have been featured on this podcast. Like that's not cheap. And it pained me to see that invoice get paid in that month because it was like, that was our profit. But like back to how revenue has continued to grow, first leap was getting rid of the property managers. Second leap was actually investing in professional photography because that made a huge difference. And so like,
shout out Dirt and Glass.
I know, you know.
I know who it is. Pam was just at Cozy Rock with me last week. And like, I love them so much. First and foremost, I fell in love with them because they're photography, but also they're good people. But you're right. It is a big expense that all comes out of 1 month, but then it does pay off over time. And so just looking at the numbers in a spreadsheet isn't always as helpful. I know. But maybe that's my way of justifying.
But that's what I'm chasing. That's my mindset this year is like, I want to have my eyes on the numbers every month and I want to be mindful and I want to be, you know, mindful of what I'm spending money on and if it's actually necessary or if it's just something that I want for fun, you know?
Yes. Yes. It's a tough balance, especially like I said before, when you have a full-time job too, I feel like that makes it harder for me to say no.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't believe we're on the last question already, but I couldn't help but notice that your place, I'm being very vague here, is called the Tahoe House.
Yeah.
And does not have the words cabin in it. But when you're looking at your listing, and honestly, like I followed you on Instagram first and looking at the pictures, it very much has a cabin feel to it.
Yeah.
On the inside, you have a lot of wood. You don't have like wood everywhere on the inside, but you have a lot of wood accents around yep. windows and like on the ceiling.
Yep.
Did you add those in? And like what makes a cabin and why haven't you used the word cabin in the name of your property?
Okay. So, I mean, here's the easy answer of where the Tahoe House comes from. So, you know, Kevin and I bought this house in 2019. We're living in the Bay Area. And so at this point we have the house we live in, which we're renting, and we have the house in Tahoe, which we referred to between each other as the Tahoe House. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm looking at this thing online and he's like, what's it for? I'm like, oh, it's for the Tahoe House. So like that was just how we referred to it between the two of us. And so we were trying to get all creative. We're like, we're going to call it the Kingsbury Cabin because that's the name of the road it's on. And like eventually we're like, it's the Tahoe House. Like that's what we call it between each other. And so like, let's just use that as the name. And so that's why it's called the Tahoe House, is because that's how we referred to it. And I will say, like, we had looked at a lot of cabins in Tahoe, like your traditional rickety cabins, and like, the Tahoe House is more of a house. Like it's one story. It's, you know, it's not made of wood, you know, it has like rock on and stone on the outside and like a regular garage door. And so like it has a cabin feel, it has a Tahoe feel, but, you know, it's the Tahoe House. Like,
yeah, I feel like that's a fair representation. When I look at it, it has touches of cabin, but it does feel more like a house. Yeah. If you were to define a cabin specifically, being that you do live in an area where there's lots of cabins, what would be those distinguishing characteristics that would make a house become a cabin?
Yeah, I think there's a cozy element to it, like having the fire, like those wood elements. The house had some wood elements, and then we added the wood on the ceilings and like some of the wood details. And so I think that coziness is what makes a cabin. And yeah, it's just like, it's hard to put into words because it's like a feeling. Like you walk into a space and it's cozy, and it's kind of like that feeling we talked about when you get to your house on the lake and when you drop into the Tahoe Basin. Like it's just a feeling when you walk in of like ease and cozy and comfort. And so I think we've done a good job of combining, like, it's cozy. A lot of cabins in Tahoe are cozy, but they're also like your grandma's cabin cozy. And so we've like added that cozy to, in addition to that, we have these like elevated amenities. You know, we've got the hot tub, we've got the mugs and the spa robes and the spa towels and the coffee bar and all of those like modern amenities that you would want.
Yeah.
So I think it comes down to cozy. It's like a feeling. It's hard to put in words.
I love that you said that, because cozy is like my favorite word. But I love that in your Airbnb title, you call it a modern getaway with hot tub. And so it does, even that, it does evoke, and all of your initial pictures do evoke those feelings of cozy and cabin-ish, but you never say the word cabin. And I do really respect that you're like, okay, well, there's a line. This feels more like a house, but it has all the same vibes as a getaway, like as a cabin getaway.
Yeah. I was just going to say kind of my mindset going into this year, right? Cause you were talking a lot about that revenue growth, jumping and jumping and jumping. And so 2023, I'm like, man, like 130K in revenue. Like this is the peak. Like I never thought this place could make six figures. And so I was like, this is the peak. Like I'm done. And the more I did the analysis, I realized, so we did 130K in revenue and I feel like we're always booked solid. Like there's always back-to-back turnovers. But when you actually look at the data, we're booked at 100% occupancy all summer and 100% occupancy all winter, but really only on the weekends in the off season. And so our average over the year was 65%. And so like, again, the sales-minded person in me is like, whoa, like there's a huge opportunity there. And that is where the like realizing most of like, how can we optimize? How can we fill in, you know, we have this asset. How can we optimize and get like, I want the house at 95% occupancy over the year. How do I do that? And so that's where the, you know, looking into our guest avatars, trying to create the positioning to attract families, to attract people traveling with their dog, working with influencers in the off seasons to promote it. Like, that's my mission this year is like, because I thought we were done. Like, the asset is maximized. And when you look at the data, it's probably not either your occupancy or your nightly rate. Like, we started using dynamic pricing in 2023, and that was another big leap. And so, you know, just when you think like, there's always a lot of potential with just one property, and you can always keep maximizing it and optimizing it. You know, you don't need all these doors, though I would like to have more doors. Like, this year is like, how do we optimize what we have, you know?
Yeah. I love that perspective that you can grow a business even with one property. Of course, you can also grow it with multiple properties. But for those of us where it isn't financially possible or we don't want to, then there are still opportunities for growth in this.
Yeah.
Janelle, this has been amazing. I feel like this has been one of the most business-minded podcast interviews we've had. And I really appreciate that. And I think it's going to be really helpful for people who are listening.
I love it. Yeah. We need to be friends. Like, I've met a lot of people on Instagram that have become friends in real life. And when you and I met, I was just like, I feel like Janice and I are like, we're similar. Like, we need to be friends. So I was glad you invited me. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. And if you liked what you heard, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or share some of your favorite parts over on Apple Podcast. If you have feedback or suggestions for the future, you can also find me on Instagram @CozyRockCabin. Looking forward to next week.